Hey, everyone. Welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Becky, and joining me for this episode is Leah. Hi, Leah.
Hi, everybody.
And Amanda. Hi, Amanda.
Hello.
And we are so excited. We have for you, this is the first time we've done a live author on a Wednesday night episode. So welcome to our inaugural guest, J.R. Ward. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, we are so excited to have you. Giselle popped into our in our email, and we were like, yes. Yes, please.
What I really appreciate it.
We're super excited to have you. So just real quick, I'm going to hand this over to Leah, but before we get started, everybody that's in the chat viewing live, you are welcome to ask all the questions you want in the chat. We will relay them over to JR and answer what we can. Also, this episode, after we're off live, it will then go into our podcast feed. So if for some reason you have to step away, it will remain on YouTube. It will also go over to our normal podcast feed forever.
Yeah,
forever. Anyway, okay, Leah, you're up.
Okay, so I do have one question to start out. Why are you called the warden?
Oh my God. That goes back to, well, so I've been in the business for 850 million years. And back in the days when authors connected to their readership and fans through message boards, we called the message board the cell and then the warden. And so that's where it came from. And that was like, that's like literally like 20 years old.
That's so fantastic.
I mean, it's a message board. So yes, because I don't think those exist anymore.
Outside of Reddit, I don't think so.
I mean, my I am happy on Reddit, though. My heart is always happy on Reddit.
Oh, I love the "Am I the asshole?" Like, yes. I will read the
so
shit
much.
Out of that. That
so much so
that and "Am I overreacting?" And like half the
time, I haven't seen that one.
You're not on. They got their fucking head wedged. I'm like, that's good. So
I do love the "Am I the asshole?"
Am I the asshole? It actually makes me feel better about myself. Like, I'm not as big an asshole as I used to think I am.
So what initially drew you to romance as a writer?
So when I was in my middle teens, I started reading Harlequin Presents.
Yes.
And I fell in love with like Penny Jordan, Sarah Mather, like early Elizabeth Lowell. Then I switched over to like Silhouette Special Editions. I ate that shit up. And I had always had stories in my head, and that was just sort of the way the software package ran. And I started writing them down when I was like 7 years old. And my mom still has George and the Dragon, which was my first magnum opus, as it were. And and so I wanted to write what I loved to read. Because it just, it's, I think there's a million different ways things can go tits up when you're falling in love with someone, no matter what world you're in. And since the basis of all good story is conflict, you know, I think it's a great high stakes, emotionally intensive vocabulary to, you know, like not vocabulary, but like paradigm to display the human condition and the way humans behave and what happens. And I just love it. I love it.
So clearly you've been writing for a long time, but what made you decide to publish that first book?
Well, I wasn't going to. I have no outside interests. I'm not a well-rounded individual. I have no hobbies. And so I was working as a lawyer up in Boston, and instead of, I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't like to go out, I don't do anything. And so like, I used to just stay in and I used to just write because I loved to do it. I never thought I'd be able to get published because it was like, this was back in the days before the internet, you know, this was like 1995, 96. And I had all these partials and then finished books around, but I didn't know how, I didn't know anyone who'd ever been published. I didn't know even how to like scale that mountain. And my boyfriend at the time, who has now been my husband forever, was like, you know, these are real books, you should do this. And he had an ex-girlfriend who had interned for a literary agent in New York City. And that was my entree. And she said she'd represent me. And then, you know, we had a little bidding war for my first book. And that's how it got started. And then four books in, I got shit canned by the publisher, got fired. And I had to reinvent myself. And yeah. It was through that reinvention that Rath came and visited me, and I started down the Black Dagger Brotherhood road. Yeah. And so that's sort of how we ended up here.
That's fascinating, because like querying for agents back then was way different than it is now. Way different.
Yeah, it's a whole different world. Like, dude, those first like bunch of even Black Dagger Brotherhood books, we were doing copy edits on paper. Mm-hmm. You know, with handwriting and everything.
I just think of all the trees that died
So many trees. Although I will tell you, I still do first pass on paper. I still print it out and I still handwrite everything, because I think there's like, when you submit a manuscript, it goes through copy editing and then it gets typeset, and first pass is the typeset version of each page of the book. And I think seeing it actually the way it's going to look on the page, but then also reading it, not on a computer, not online, but reading it physically and then writing it physically, it brings an extra layer of attention and analysis to it. So I still do it the old fashioned way that way. So trees still die.
Wow. But not as many. But I do. I think about that, like, cause you figure like back in the day, like you had to print out your manuscript and send it in, and you had to send it into lots of publishing places, cause nobody got a yes on the first, well, some people did, but it was a rare occasion to get a yes on the first try. So you were sending like hundreds of manuscripts out.
No, you didn't.
She's in.
Oh, this is fascinating.
That's amazing.
No, I only sent one out to this agent, and then she said yes, it'd represent me, and then
that's awesome.
Sent it out to 4 publishers, and we got 2 offers. So I'm sorry.
You're a bit of a unicorn.
Why are you sorry?
That is amazing.
You're
a unicorn.
Well, you know, either that or a jackass who doesn't have anything else to do for the, I mean, like, I don't have a B plan. Okay. Like, I'm either going to be a lawyer or I'm going to be in my, by the way, I have, this is all, you know, the top looks really good, but I'm actually.
You have the business mullet on.
Yes. I have the business
Susan
mullet
Stoker on. Susan
Stoker
calls it the business mullet.
Yes, it is. So I just want to cop to that. But yeah,
I think she did an interview with us once, and she's like, I don't even have pants on.
She did. She did do an interview with us once, and she told us she did not have pants on.
I have pants on, but they're boxer shorts and PJ bottoms. But she wins. I've run into Susan Stoker a number of times, and she is funny. God, that woman is funny.
So funny.
She is. I love her so much.
But anyway, so back to the thing. Yeah, no, I was just really lucky. I was really, really lucky. Again, I don't have a B plan. This was all I wanted. This was all I liked to do with the free time I had. And I just have been really lucky for like now 25 years.
We call that a special interest, which is why there's a podcast about romance, because my husband was tired of listening to me talk about it, especially in my Ruby Dixon phase. He's like, now would be a really good time for you to start a podcast. And I'm like, okay, let's do it.
Get me a mic. We need to mic this bitch up.
Yeah. Right? Now we're here almost 6 years later. So
yep, there you go.
Totally get it.
Oh, so and by the way, when I said mic this bitch, I meant like the vibe of the podcast, not you as.
It's really cool.
Well, funny story though. Her husband's name is Mike.
Mike.
Yep. Oh. Yeah.
So, you know, it's fine. I am the, yeah.
So we know the Black Dagger Brotherhood is quite an elaborate world. How do you keep it straight?
I don't. I fuck up a lot. I mean, look, I'm going to be honest with you. There's 42, 45 books in the series. And my research assistant and I do everything we can to make sure that within those 45 books that the canon is respected, that all the right things are said and done that are based on all of the books and all of the subplots and everything. And we still managed to miss it. Like Butch, who cannot dematerialize in one of the training center books. I don't know what the hell we were thinking. Like, and I cannot tell you how many times we go over these books and like, we try so hard to catch everything and we both missed it. I don't know why, probably because we're so distracted fixing other things. So we do what we can, but for me, I don't think up any of these books. I'm not smart enough to. I have pictures in my head and they download when they want to out of order. And so when Rath decided that I passed some sort of test and that he was going to show up in my head after stalking me for about 2 weeks, of writer's block while I was trying to reinvent myself. I can look at a scene through someone's eyes, look at the person they're talking to. I can go into that person's eyes, look at the other person. I can get myself out and watch it happen. And my job is the secretary. I just record what I see. And if I've done my job right, then the reader will be able to approximate what I'm seeing in my head or what I'm being shown. So I'm nothing more than a glorified stenographer. And so the world is what it is, both for, like, you know, the Kingdoms of the Compass series, for Crown of War and Shadow, the Black Dagger Brotherhood series, the Bourbon Kings, whatever world I'm in. And it's kind of like living in a town where you, like, know the inner stories and all the gossip of all the people who live in the town. That's kind of the way it is for me. Like, sort of like I know who my next door neighbor is because I've, like, lived with them for 20, you know, next to him for 20 years or however long. It's been 15 for me. So, like, I know their history and I know their kids and I know their stories and I, like, know who they are as people. That's the same way. I feel like I live in these worlds. And, okay. Like, you know, one of the interesting things is you look like the Jack Reacher series by Lee Childs. Yeah. Jack Reacher is exactly who he is. So yeah. You can read the first book and the 10th book and the 9th book and the 4th book. And he is who he is. There's no progression for him. My books don't work like that. So when you read Dark Lover, you kind of get on the ride. And you know, now we're up to, you know, however many, 23 in the main series. And all of those lives have kept going, just like all my life has kept going. Other people's, you know, our lives keep going. And there's evolutions. And that's part of the thing that I like to do is I like to see the characters or people far, far down the line from where they started.
So do you plan out your series or do you just kind of let it roll?
No, there's no, no planning. No. The stories, the visions, they don't care about my opinion. If they want my opinion, they'll give it to me. I don't plan anything out. I don't construct anything. There's no vision boards. By the way, this is just how it works for me. I think all writers are very different. And I think whatever works for that particular writer is the correct way. So I'm not advocating for this. And I think I have tons of friends who do it lots of different ways and it's all the right answer. But for me, you know, there's no vision boards, there's no inspiration, there's no anything. I'm just, you know, a reporter living in these worlds and I just take notes and type.
Yeah. So I say this in every author spotlight I do, because I handle 90% of the author interviews for the podcast now. And that is one of the things I love about doing these is how everybody goes from point A to point B in so many different ways, but the final result is the same.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And I think that that's one of the great things one of the things that I love about being a writer is, aside from the fact that I get to, like, do my job in my boxer shorts with my dogs in the coffee pot, is that I've struggled with this because I don't feel creative. I've never felt like I'm a creative person and I've never felt like an artist at all. Because again, where it comes from, I don't know. And it's not me. It's not part of me. It's just, you know. But I love the fact that in an artistic environment, in a creative environment, there is such acceptance for people doing whatever they're called to do, expressing themselves, not always. I understand I've got a lot of privilege and I need to acknowledge that. And I do acknowledge that, but, like, I love the fact that there's such acceptance in these writer spaces for people doing what's right for them.
Yeah. But I feel like that really about romance, Landia, this community, ourselves. I mean, no one is perfect. We all are very lucky. You know, we know where our privilege is, but there is an amount of support and connection that comes. And I think it comes from the leadership too within, which I look to, like, the authors as our leadership in a way that they kind of set the standard. Like, if you set the standard of love and respect, that is the community you're building. And I have to tell you, your community is phenomenal. Yeah. When we went to that signing, that was the first signing my friend Jenny and I had ever been at. And the people were there. They were so kind, so amazing. We looked lost at one moment. They're like, what do you need? How can we help you? But you have curated that community and they are top tier.
Well, I mean, I think I have, there's like readers of the Black Dagger Brotherhood, and then there's the fandom. Yeah. And the fandom is, you know, one of the things that I love, I do this big Cincinnati event every year, and seeing the same people coming back for decades and seeing the costumes and seeing the camaraderie and the groups of people and the joy. And, you know, I mean, where else am I going to get my ass slapped for 2 hours straight? Because like I think there's nothing more boring in the world than, and this is no offense to anyone, like I just put my foot in it. Well, anyway, I think it's more fun if I didn't read any of your questions. Like I want to come in totally without preparation, because I think it just is more natural. It's more honest. Mm-hmm. And what I love about going into that event is I feel like I'm just another member of the community. And like I'm an introvert, so I have every phobia known to man, except for the one that apparently is the most common, which is fear of public speaking. I mean, give me a mic and 2,000 people and I'm like, okay, you know, I'm totally comfortable. You give me a cocktail party of like 50 people, I'm ready to throw myself out a plate glass window to get away from it. It's really weird, but I think it's because I share the same passion and excitement about the world of the Black Dagger Brotherhood and these books as everyone else who shows up does, whether you're a reader or you're part of the fandom. And so I really don't think I set any standard or curate anything. I think it comes from them. I think it's an incredible group of people, and I'm grateful to just be a part of it. I don't feel like I lead anything.
Wow.
I hope that doesn't sound weird.
No, it sounds fantastic. And I'm actually in Findlay, and I'm like, I live in Findlay, Ohio, Northwest Ohio, straight up 75. And I'm like sitting here thinking, maybe we need a road trip to Cincinnati.
Fancy trip. Well, and as you're talking, I'm reading the comments that are coming through, and I'm just like giggling because one of them said we're also feral.
The other thing, the thing that I love about it is they will fuck you up. Like they will call you out on shit. I love that. I love that. And so what I end up doing is I end up just grabbing a mic and I just go out into the crowd and I just give people the mic and they can say whatever they want and ask whatever they want. And the jokes are phenomenal. I mean, I will do anything to make someone laugh. There's no ego involved. If I can get a room of people laughing, it's like my favorite thing in the world. And, you know, they'll hand my ass to me on a plate, like the whole Welsey thing. So I didn't kill Welsey. That's just what happened. I knew she was going to die from book one. And, you know, I still have people coming up to me like, you killed her. I'm like, it's the Rice Krispies. And they're like, fuck you. I don't want to hear about Rice Krispies. That's a cereal. And I'm like, yeah, but it's right here, the Rice Krispies. And they're like, you're out of your mind. You killed that woman. You
know, so now the Rice Krispies, there's a ton of Rice Krispie comments in the, and I thought, maybe this group just really likes breakfast cereal.
No, it's the Rice Krispies. And everyone's like, fuck you. And the Rice Krispies. I mean, it's great. Like, I love it. And it's a wonderful, unexpected, incredible blessing. You know, because when you start out writing, you know, the chances of finding that accord with such a huge group of people over so many years. I mean, who the fuck? I certainly didn't plan for this. I was going to be a lawyer my entire life, you know?
You and like 70% of the romance writer community.
I think it was
Avery Flynn that said to us once, she goes, you can't swing a cat in Romance Landia without hitting a lawyer. And I was like, okay.
That is so true.
We didn't believe her at the time, but the longer we do this, the more we do.
Yeah. We're like, okay, we know a few, like a couple here and there, but no, we know a lot now.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there a piece of advice that present author you would give past author you?
No. Mm-mm. No. No. Here's the thing. You know, you should tell me to fuck myself. You should just go and tell me to fuck off, because this is
Because I want to hear this. I want to hear why.
Okay. Here's the
deal. Because I'm very interested in why. Because you're the first person who has said no.
No, there's no. Okay. Here's the deal. There are so few things in life that are really under our control. Okay.
Yeah.
And the idea that you can go back to some earlier version of yourself, even a hypothetical, and tell them anything that will make a material difference, given the number of elements that are strictly out of our control, okay, about anything, is absurd.
Yeah.
The reality is, the one thing I can control is make no excuses for my commitment to work and to show the fuck up and sit my ass down when I'm tired or I'm sick or I don't feel like I don't want to be there or the writing's going like hell. The only thing I can control is to sit down and do the fucking work. And I've done that ever since I started this. And now 20 years on and 65 books, same fucking commitment right here. And after we all wrap this up, I'm going to bed and I'm up at 5 a.m. and I'm sitting my ass down and I'm working. That's the one thing I can control. So there's nothing to tell myself because I've been doing the same shit. I have no more control over anything now than I did 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Market forces, reader interests and commitment, things going on in the world, publisher priorities, agents, none of that. It's an illusion that anyone thinks that they can control anything other than their own effort, commitment to excellence, and clear-sighted judgment about their own work.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not asking anyone to blow smoke up my ass. I'm not blowing smoke up my ass. Mm. Okay. I write shit. I make mistakes. I can do better.
Yeah.
And that's the same for 20 fucking years. And God willing, when I have these are all fake teeth, but if I am in a fucking walker and I am eating Jell-O with a fucking straw 20 years from now, that's still going to be true. So that's all I got. And you should tell me to go fuck myself because I should give you the inspiration.
I think that is a great answer. I really do.
It actually makes a lot of sense because you can't change who you were or what you did 3 weeks ago. All you can do is get up tomorrow, show up, and do the work. You know, a lot of us are sitting right now with our heads, you know, down a little bit because this fire. And instead of, you know, bed rotting, except when we get really overstimulated and our dogs are barking too much, then we have to bed rot for like 20 minutes.
But that's a whole other conversation.
That's a different conversation with naughty puppies. But you have to show up. You have to get out of bed. You have to put your pants on. Like, we have a rule in our house because our son had liver disease. And so we have a rule in our house. It doesn't matter what the day brings. I don't care how bad you feel. You have to get up. You have to get dressed. We wash our face. We eat our breakfast. And we are there for the day. Doesn't matter how sick you are. Show up.
Yep. So
I commend you for that because that shows commitment.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. We're getting kind of like meta. And I don't mean in a Facebook kind of way.
Not in a fun way.
You know, here's the thing. Reality does not require our consent or affection to exist. Okay.
True.
Reality is what it is. And some of it's good, a lot of it's bad. And I just think, you know, what are the things that I can do that I can change my situation, that I can make it better, that I can write better, I can do better in my life, in the world. And that's all I got. You know,
One of the people in the chat asked, Tally asks, are pants optional when you show up each morning?
No, actually, I do have my pants on because I tend to get a little chilly.
There you go.
But yeah, no, pants optional.
No, we go on the soft pants, hard pants line.
No, soft pants. I don't like jeans.
We like a soft pant.
I don't wear jeans. Like, I don't know. I'm soft. I'm soft pantser.
We have to define the event in my house. Is this a soft pant appropriate event or is this a hard pants?
That's awesome. I think may I please have permission to
absolutely
to use I love this. I'm going to say that to my husband. Is this a soft pant or a hard pant situation?
Yeah. Well, we got a lot of neuro spiciness in this house, so we do best with very easy, understandable boundaries.
Okay, we have a question from the chat. There are a lot of references to color. Is there more to the scribe version, like a link to a present character? Also, will we see more of Bedlam or Aggie?
Yes.
And Aggie.
Yes, you will. On both of those, definitely.
Okay.
And then, I'm sorry, I don't understand the color question.
Yeah.
There's a lot of references to color.
Okay.
Is there more to the scribe virgin, like a link to a present character?
There is a link to a present character with regard to the scribe virgin.
Okay. But that's all you're getting, people. I'm sorry.
Listen, it's better than a total keep reading. That was sort of like a half keep reading.
Yeah, she says like the color of Raven's eyes.
Maybe.
Oh, so she's going vague with those answers. Well, Jen Ellen, one of our listeners, she had asked in our Discord to ask you this. And she said, does she have plans to end the Black Dagger Brotherhood?
I know the last scene in the series. And right now we're working our way through the kids, and I want to keep reading it because I often view myself as the first reader of these books, mm-hmm. not as the author, because of the way the pictures work. I want to keep writing them as long as people are super excited to keep reading them. Yeah. And at some point, all things have a beginning, middle, and an end. People do. Pets do. Lives, you know, eras in your life do. So it won't go on forever, because nothing goes on forever. But I'm hoping to keep it going for a good another chunk of time, because I have at least another 10 books I want to write.
How do you find the time, my friend? Because but the Crown of Warren Shadow, it's a 5-book planned series?
It's 4 books right now.
4 books. Just,
yeah, I was going to say, okay. In the picture, it's only 4.
Is it 4? Yes. Okay.
Yeah, well, but it's also kind of open-ended, because I want to go and do an origin story. So if I did the origin story, there's an origin story that I want to do. So that would be 5 books. Yeah.
Leah's obsessed with your sprayed edges on this book. I just have
they're
to
so
say.
They're so pretty.
They're
so pretty.
I love them. That's Monique Patterson.
Well, and I showed, so my daughter is 12, and she is a lover like of reading as well. And so I was like, check out, I showed her my book because it showed up today. I was like, but check out like the whole series together. She's like, oh, that's real pretty. I was like, I know. I can't wait to get my hands on them all. Although I'll have to wait for a while. But she's like, yeah, because they'll look really nice on your shelves that you don't have currently. But yeah, so they're gorgeous. But so
it's a beautiful packaging.
Let's chat Crown of Warren Shadow, Kingdoms of the Compass.
It has a map. Did you?
Oh, yeah. One. Oh, it's a map.
There's a map.
I love a good map.
I just really like the way the whole thing was formatted with the imagery inside of it, and like the way the parts are broken down.
Come on.
It's great. Also, did you?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is there anything on the back too, or is it just this? Oh, no.
No, I think it's just, let's find
it. It's just purple.
I should know. Oh, it's just purple.
But is the spine gold lettering?
The spine has gold lettering, yeah.
Yeah, it's very, very thin. One of the things I love about the new generation of readers and where the market is now is that these books that we as authors put hundreds of hours into, now they're like collector's editions. They're like works of art. They're so beautiful.
Yeah. I don't read any of my physical books. They're just pretty trophies on my shelf.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm a collector, and I love some of these other, we've got some different versions of Crown of Warren Shadow coming out from Bookish Box and Maycrate. Those things are so breathtakingly beautiful.
Amanda, how many of these have you ordered?
I haven't yet. They're not available.
Not available yet.
I have reminders on my calendar.
Amanda's our special edition person. She cannot get enough of them.
Yes.
Well, it depends on the special edition for the rest of us too. Becky, who has seven copies of certain books.
I have seven copies of certain books, but I also, my collection is mass market. Like, I've been in mourning all week for the death of mass market. Like, it makes me so sad.
I know. So I know. Sad. It's just really, I have the original Black Dagger Brotherhood mass markets with the original covers, not the new one, not the two new ones, but, and I cherish them.
I have your bourbon series in mass market. I thrifted it and like, it will not leave my shelves. It's mine forever.
It's beautiful. I loved mass, with those soft covers that you could like prop up on a pillow and read, you know?
Yeah.
You can crack the spine on those ones. It's allowed.
You can. I love mass market. It makes my heart happy. Anyway, that was random. Let's talk about her new book.
Yes. Okay. So your new book comes out February 17th, 2026. There's some witchcraft, epic fantasy, chosen mates, hidden magic, forced proximity. Like, there's lots of things, but it's not super tropey at the same time. So where did the idea come from?
Because we don't want to spoil this for anyone.
No,
but we don't.
We all were blessed with an advanced copy. Shout out to Bramble.
Well, and I did the audio of it, which I really enjoyed.
The audio is exceptional. If you haven't listened to the audio yet, exceptional audio.
Yeah, it was really well.
Weird. So when I got shit canned, and by the way, the publisher was right to shit can me, because although the first four Jessica Byrd books I wrote were critically well acclaimed and one got nominated for the Rita, I didn't find an audience. And this is a business, you know, and unless you find an audience, you know, they were right to do what they did. So Rath came and found me, and usually when you send in back then or now a proposal and you're already a published author, so you know, you can do it on what they call spec, so you don't have to send the whole book in. So you usually do like a query and like three sample chapters or whatever. The Black Dagger Brotherhood proposal was 120 pages.
Okay.
Because I had 69 pages of the actual book, and then the rest of it was actually world building, explaining like, here are the other four books, or the other 10 books, and here, you know, here's what the world is, and all that business. I was in tears when I mailed it off, and I'm not a terribly emotional person, but I was convinced that no one was going to publish it, because back then, you know, the fact that the hero got the heroine's name carved in his back at the end of the book, and then there's like all this like vampire shit, and it was very gritty. And it was very raw sexually, you know, for back then it was. Right. I was like, no one's ever going to publish this shit. So while I was waiting to hear back, I had this vision of a medieval world in a fantasy situation. And I saw four people in like this turret, this medieval turret, sitting around this compass that was glowing. Okay. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. Well, maybe when the vampires don't sell, I can write this. So I let the way it works for me is once I start to get pictures, I just let them spool out. Mm-hmm. And it's like casting lines into a river, like fly fishing, where I can just see it spool. I don't know how else to describe it. It's like spooling out of images and of people and of places, and then they kind of weave together into these scenes in my head. So I outlined, and then to my shock of all shocks, we sold the Black Dagger Brotherhood, and we were off to the races. So I put it away for like 20 years, and then 2 years ago I had some space in my publishing schedule, because I've been doing three books a year forever, and all of a sudden my agent was like, you know, do you have any romantasy ideas? You know, cause we're just kind of spitballing. And I was like, well, I had this idea 20 years ago. Let me see what I can do with it. And all of a sudden I realized, I was like, holy shit, I think this is a romantasy. Like, I had to tool it into like first person, and I had to restructure some things, but like, we sent it off, and Bramble was the perfect home for it, because as a trad publisher, like, they do such good work in the romantasy space.
They do.
I mean, the packaging and also the editorials, you know. And so I was like really excited, because I don't read a lot, and I was aware of the romantasy genre, because, you know, you'd have to be sound asleep not to be. But the fact, so then I decided, okay, We sold the book on spec, sold the series on spec. And I was like, well, now I gotta like, I was like, why don't I, well, we're working out all the details before I actually started, why don't I go read a romantasy just to see what one's like? Oh, mm-hmm. I read Agatar. Oh my God. Oh God. So first of all, I am a hack. I need to like bury my keyboard in the backyard or light it on fire. Sarah J. Maas ruined me in that book because what she does, like, you know, even though I have visions and I type them out, I also like understand how to deconstruct story and how to analyze characters and like how to like edit a book, right? What mm-hmm. she does in Agatar is so hard. She does it so well, but from an authorial point of view, to do what she does in that book, it is incredibly different. The level of mastery that she has over story, over character arc, over character development, over pacing. Like I was like, oh, I am a fucking hack. So that's the, that was just such a pleasure to read and also an absolute nightmare. So, you know, I started to write it. I realized that romantasy is a lot harder to write than anything I've ever written before. First person is very complicated because it kind of ties your hands in good ways and then opens up other avenues for you to kind of get the reader where you need them to be in some ways. But it's a huge book. I mean, this is like, what, 175,000 words? I mean, they're huge books.
It was that long? It didn't feel that long.
No.
Thank you very much.
It goes very fast. It did not. Yes. And this is not my genre.
It was 466 pages.
So yeah, this is, I was engaged. I was in.
I'm so glad that you said that because like, to me, it's like a movie to me. It's not like even a book, like it's so cinematic.
Oh, I totally would watch
yeah.
this.
Yeah.
Like, and just like seeing the scenes as it played out.
Especially some of those end scenes.
Yeah. Oh God.
Like, yeah, the cinematic like option, if I had that, like, oh my God, those would be amazing.
Yeah, the battle scenes.
Yeah.
The fight scenes, like the monsters, everything.
And Levante, the stallion. Like, give me a good stallion.
I loved him so much.
Oh my God. Yes. I love him so much. And yes, he's in the second book. I love Levante.
Okay, good.
Yay.
There's just something about like an animal that like really is like such an outstanding character
yeah
in a book that I just can't handle it sometimes how much I like it.
Yeah,
just so you know, people are planning their day off next Tuesday on release day.
I'm so excited. Oh, listen, by the way, it's in Kindle Unlimited, so it's yeah. coming yeah. out in Kindle yes. Unlimited. It's the first JR Award book that's come out on release day in Kindle. Very rarely does my stuff go into it yeah. because my publishers are not, mm-hmm. I love my publishers. I've actually had great publishers and great relationships with them. They tend to not put my stuff into Kindle Unlimited. But I'm super excited that's part of, I want as many people to be able to read this as possible yeah. because it's, and not from like, and it's not about the money. It's just like, I want people to get super excited.
The access. You want the access.
Yeah.
Well, and that's nice. Bramble does that. And that's yeah. one of the mm-hmm. things that I really do love about this label is they're about getting the book in hands of readers. And
that's yeah. what I love.
And it feels very reader forward. And really, and we tell them this all the time, they're one of our favorite publishers. We work with a lot yeah. of different publishers. And yeah. the girls at Bramble are some of the best and our favorite to work with.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, mine too.
So okay. for your, like, each of your chapters have titles. Now, do you title them ahead of time, like as you're writing the chapter, or you title them afterwards?
No, well, so when I the first draft of Crown was a living, breathing nightmare, and it took me like 9 months to get the first draft done because it's just so complicated. And I was like how much do I tell, how much do I show? I know where everything goes, but like starting here, where do we end? You know, it was just really hard for me to get like the titration right between like explaining the mythology but keeping the plot going, you know, because even though I have all of these scenes in my head, how you describe them, how much mm-hmm. you describe them, what, you know, what you show of each scene, because I don't always show everything in each scene.
Right.
If you do that, then like I give away, you know, So it took me for freaking ever to put that together. And then I had to revise it. And, you know, I quickly realized that I was underwater and drowning, which I think is really good, by the way. I think to be 20 years in an industry and have a knack for it, and yet stretch myself and scare the shit out of myself and not know what I'm doing again was awesome. It was so great to feel as incompetent as I truly am, because like I've been lulled into a false sense of security that I know what I'm doing with the Black Decker Brotherhood, because in that world, like I kind of know. Like
you're so comfortable there.
I'm so comfortable in it, and I know how to execute those books, and to feel newbie stupid again is such a great place to be, because I think it's when we are lost and floundering that we are most open to learning. Because like, and whether it harkens back to a 5 million year old survival reflex or whatever, I relished being a novice again. It was awesome.
Well, I mean, so you can't tell.
Well, I appreciate
at all.
Yeah, Amanda's so, our romanticy fantasy authority.
Yes, like honestly, like if it's a romanticy, we're like, Amanda, is this worth it? Like, is this gonna be a good one? So
yeah.
So Amanda, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
One of the pieces of feedback that I've gotten from people who have read Crown early is that it's not like anything that's out there. And I think what they mean is that it's not full of fae and it's not full of like, you know, court magic and everything. And that can be like a good thing, or it can also be a really bad thing. It can also mean, well, you've missed the mark, or you've, you know, and I just was curious, like how you position this in the market in terms of other things that are out there.
So it is different in the type of supernatural beings that you have, but there are other, you know, books out there with similar. I think it's different because you bring like that gritty paranormal feel to this. You're not getting this sweeping. I mean, you do, but it's like you're down in the dirt. Like this is gritty, it's real. So that was like, that bridges a big gap for me, because I'm a very big paranormal reader. And I also read fantasy, and I think this is like the perfect bridge between the two. And I think that's why it's not like anything else out there. It's very different. I loved it. Like it's very different than anything else out there. And that's where it stood out to me in the, you know, the canon of everything else that's out there. So I think that's how it's different.
But you still feel like it's a romantic-y.
Yes.
Because I felt like it wasn't, and I know that Monique,
if it wasn't, she would tell
me. Yeah, I have big feelings.
Yeah, no, I am open to feedback. Clearly, but like, and I think that was one of the great things for me as someone who doesn't read romantic-y, working with Monique. Monique Patterson, who's my editor, like she's very, you know, very deep embedded into romantic-y. And so she was very helpful. Like, okay, Jess, you know, like we got to make sure we ground the reader a little bit more here, little bit more here, you know? So she, yeah.
And I think helpful. you do a really good job too of balancing the world building, because it's harder in romantic-y. You can do a ton of the world building and maybe lose a little bit of the plot, but I don't think you lose any of it. And at the first I was kind of like, what's going on here? Like what's happening? And then it all starts to unfold like in a gradual, like natural way that makes sense. So it worked really well for me. And I think that's probably maybe what people are talking about, because I didn't find any of that in negative at all.
Okay, good. Yeah. That was one of the things that I was worried about, because when you start hearing that over and over again, you're like, well, I may have shit the bed.
No.
So I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
If you had shit the bed, Amanda would have been like, I'm sorry, I'm unavailable for Wednesday night. Instead, she's been like hyperventilating.
No, she would not come on and say anything bad to you. So she would just kind of, she would bow out gracefully. Yeah. But she's also the one where like she read a book where it was marketed as romantic. She's like, this is totally not romantic. It's urban fantasy. They need to like tell somebody about it.
Fix it.
Yeah. Well, I think that it's important to respect the subgenre that you're in. Yes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I think it's important. And I also feel like it's important to respect the reader. Yes. Because I'm very conscious of the fact that people are putting their hard-earned money down to buy this. This is a commercial product. They're not reading it because they love me. They're reading it because they love something in this that makes it worth the money they have to pay.
Yeah.
And I'm very, very conscious and always have been of that. You know, I don't want to waste people's time. And I the reason why I work so hard is because I feel like the readers have more than earned that effort in return for what they're giving me, which is money and time from their life. I mean, it's a, I know I hate to use the word because it seems pandering, but it's a sacred kind of relationship. And I was talking about the nature of authors and readers. And, you know, readers are not welcome in the space when I'm writing. No one is. My family is not. I'm not even welcome in it. It is what it is. And I don't want to ever push myself into the reader's space on the other side. Readers have every right to read books and not like them and talk about not liking them and review them accurately or inaccurately. And what I think is interesting about the way readers and authors come together is it's a way of shaking hands over the book, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like the two sides that are independent coming together over the book. And I think as long as I respect the reader and respect the boundary of not getting into their space, I feel like it's a really healthy relationship and has always been so for me, because I recognize readers' rights to buy whatever book they want or not buy it. And even after having been in for 20 years, I feel like I have to go out and earn it every time, because I do. And that's the right way to approach things.
I think the first time when we heard you talk that first night in that keynote, one of the first things you said is that you talked about, like, your opinion of my books is not my business. It's not my business. Thank you for being here. Thank you for reading my books. And I think Jenny was sitting next to me and she elbowed me. She's like, she's our people. Because it is that respect of...
Yeah. It's a respect thing. It's,
you know, this is your space, you're creative, and it's okay if I didn't like it. Do I need to tell you that to your face? No, I do not.
But if you want to, that's also okay. Because I might learn something.
You might.
You know, I might. And if you're a prick, well, then you're a prick. And and how you approach that conversation says a lot about your character,
right?
Which is also none of my business, you know?
That's true. But yeah, it was just the respect that you have for readers in general. It again says why readers flock to you.
Well, I'm very grateful. I still feel like I have imposter syndrome. I'm still waiting for like the jig to be up. And everyone be like, yes, she's the incompetent boob who types a lot.
Somebody said that in the comments. I think it was Jenny, actually. She said, it's good to know everyone has imposter syndrome.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I still am looking over my shoulder when people are like, oh my God, I'm so excited to meet you. I'm like, is Stephen King behind me?
I think it's fantastic.
So the story follows Sorrel and Merc, and they're two characters who are, they're flawed and learning and figuring things out. And there's some big things that we find out about them, which we're not going to talk about, but they're just so dynamic, but softly at the same time.
And also not perfect. Cause there are moments you're like, what you doing over there, friend? Not good choices. You did not make a good choice today.
Bad choices were had.
Yeah, bad choices were had. Bad choices were made. Decisions were made. No, it was the other thing that was really weird is, not weird, but it is a slow burn romance. And it has to be because of the way they come into each other's lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because if, given who Sorrel is, she were to all of a sudden turn into, you know, there's no way she can trust Merc until she trusts him. And there's no way she's going to become intimate with him if she doesn't trust him.
Yeah.
And so part of the slow burn nature of the romance is the circumstances by which their paths cross. But damn, he's fine. He's a fine, fine mercenary.
Yes.
When the way it works for me is that moment when he comes through the door at the pub.
Mm-hmm.
I had spent so much time, you know, so I do outline, but what I do is I put the scenes that I know are going to happen in an order. Okay. Because they come in different, they're not chronological. And they also have to be staged in terms of like what the reader has to know when. And you also want to have there to be like an emotional wave to the book. So you're not you're not screaming all the time.
There were waves. Lots of waves.
Waves were also had.
People did scream. Just saying.
So I knew he was going to appear, and I realized because when I'm typing, I seat myself in the scene. Okay. And it dawned on me, I was like, holy shit, I have no idea what this fucker looks like. I've spent all this time trying to figure out like the book, and I've been so worried about the book and the metronome of the book and all this stuff and the outlining and everything. I didn't actually know what he looked like. And the door, so I'm in the pub and I can smell the mead in the air and I can hear everyone talking and I can see the villagers, and I'm looking out of Sorrel's eyes, and the door opens, and I went, oh hi. Oh hi. Oh it's you. I was like, oh hi, you know. And I'm like, really? I'm like, this is a little bit odd, but yeah, I mean, he's hot as fuck. I'm sorry, he just is.
And I read, like, you get the images in your head, I read the same way, so yes, all of it is playing out like that for me as I'm reading. And I was like, oh, hello.
Hello there. Hello there, you scarred warrior.
Yeah, I was
with
like,
the long black hair and the braids and the broadsword.
Yeah, and I think all that worked really, you know, it is a slow burn, but you're immediately caught up in the attraction. I mean, there is
Thank you for the yearning.
Yeah.
We like some good yearning in this place.
Yeah.
You
know?
We do.
Yeah.
We do have questions. So,
I'm ready.
We like to give ourselves about an hour, and we can go a little over. It's not that huge, but I want to make sure that we get a chance to ask this. Someone wants to know, it's Liz, what are you most excited about with season two? And I'm assuming she's talking about season two of the Black
Brotherhood show. Oh, God. So I have just approved all the scripts, all six episodes. And the scenes involving Zadist that are in Lover Eternal are in season two. And Andrew Bernot, who is the guy who plays Zadist, watching him act that out is going to be like, it sounds weird to say that I'm looking forward to something that's going to be painful to watch.
Yeah.
But he is going to just do an extraordinary job with those scenes with Bella. And I think it is going to be absolutely gripping to see it on screen, because that was the thing. When Dark Lover, we got the rough cuts, the first of actually all six episodes, and my best friend and I watched them. And seeing the book come to life, I mean, that's really what a lot of the book looks like in my head. And the reason why I went with Passion Flicks, even though for 20 years Hollywood has been showing interest in bringing the series to television or to movies, I thought it was important that I have script approval, casting approval, and director approval, which you don't get.
Right.
You just don't get under most circumstances. And I think that what I love about Tosca is she stays true to the book. And the scenes that are in the book are actually, there's no extrapolation. There's no, yes, they trim down some stuff because they have to. But like, I want to see those scenes with Zadist, and I want to see Andrew Bernot do it. And I think it's going to be extraordinary. And then also, I mean, Alex Cubis is beautiful. I mean, he's just beautiful. And he's going to do an extraordinary job with Rage. And the Rage and Mary dynamic, and, we, you know, we have our Mary, we've cast her. She's wonderful. I'm not going to say a lot about that right now. But, you know, the table read happens March, the first week in March, and I'm here for it. I am fucking here for it.
Exciting. Andrew's a nice cover model, too. I'm just saying.
Yes.
I might own quite a few books.
Yeah, yeah.
He likes to be on. Okay, was there any other questions?
I think we asked as they came through up. For the most part.
Okay. Is this your first time writing in single first person?
So I wrote the St. Ambrose School for Girls, which was a passion project of mine
a
couple of years ago, and that was first person. It's actually a murder mystery that takes place in a 1990s prep school for girls. And I will say that writing romanticy as a first person is, I'm glad actually that I did St. Ambrose School for Girls, because it helped me. I learned a lot about writing first person there, but romanticy is just the sprawl of everything. You know, there's an epicness to it. And then also knowing that I was kicking off a 4-book series was like, oh shit, you know.
You're in too deep now, friend.
Yeah, very deep.
Yeah.
Will Dearest Ivy ever be available in print format?
Oh my gosh, you know, that's a really good question. I will ask that. I think it's going to be interesting with mass market going by the wayside, what format they would put it in.
Yeah.
I guess they could do a trade paperback. Yeah, that's actually, I don't know. I don't know, but I can ask. I can absolutely ask.
The lady will ask.
Okay, there's another one here. You've hinted that there is another series in the work. Is that something you can talk about yet?
Oh my God, it's so good.
She wants to talk about it.
So much. I love it so much. I can't say a lot about it because my agents would kill me. But yeah.
So yes, there is something, and no, you cannot share.
I can't share anything. And no, it's not romanticy and it's not paranormal. It is romance. I would say it's romantic suspense. And it's a series.
Oh, I'm down for that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so great.
That is my jam.
Oh my God. I love it so much. And it's got a whole thing, and it's great. I can't wait. I'm probably about 100 pages into the first book, and I hope to have something exciting to report in the next couple months.
We'll be on the lookout, and once it's out in the world, we would love to have you come back and talk to us, because
I will come back and talk the shit about it. In fact, anytime you want me to come back, I will come the fuck back.
Don't put that out there, because we'll be like, hello, it is us. Would you like to come hang out? Because, you know, we're a little extra. we
like to tell people we're a lot, but we are not everybody's cup of tea.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't found you guys a lot. I think you guys are straight shooters, and you know what you like. And I actually find myself very relaxed around people like you all. Perfect. Because I'd rather I feel most comfortable when I know where I stand.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. And with people who are real straight shooters and unapologetic and kind, nice people, which doesn't mean you have to be pushovers. I feel, as you said, it's my jam and I feel comfortable here.
Well, good. We are so.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
We are so glad you came in and hung out with us for this evening. So Crown of War and Shadows, Kingdoms of the Compass, book one is out on Tuesday, February the 17th, 2026. Make sure you grab your copy. Those edges are beautiful and will look perfect on your trophy shelf. Cannot recommend the audio enough either. That was phenomenal. Thank you, JR. Thank you so much for coming and hang out.
Thank you for having me on.
It was a pleasure. We'll be back Sunday night live, 9:00, right here on YouTube. And then you can find us in our podcast feed. What are we talking about Sunday night?
I have not a clue.
We don't know. We might have an episode. We'll have an episode. I just don't know what we're talking about.
And it has a topic, but I don't remember
what I don't either.
I'm sure it is a very good topic, and it would be a very good discussion.
We pull nothing out of our ass at random on a Sunday night. Ever. Never. Anyway, until next time.
Happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.